Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's program, I am honored to have in the studio with me Barbara Hemphill, author of the new book, Less Clutter, More Life, and I have it in hand here, and it has these gorgeous pictures in it. In this book, Barbara shares her over 20 years of experience helping people eliminate physical, emotional, and spiritual clutter. Barbara shared that her insights are that the true clutter that prevents people from accomplishing their work and enjoying their lives is emotional and spiritual clutter. And I think the physical stuff just kind of manifests that mess that's inside of us. And so that's the focus of this new book, Less Clutter, More Life. Now, you may know Barbara as the Paper Tiger Lady. She started her company in 1978 with a $7 ad in the New York City paper and took her passion to help individuals and organizations eliminate physical, digital, emotional, and spiritual clutter so everyone can accomplish their work and enjoy their lives. As her experience with everyone grew, her business grew, and her vision grew. She wanted to offer women a business of their own that will provide a lucrative income and flexible hours. Oh, that sounds great. Doing something they love. So today, the company she founded, Productive Environment Institute, includes a growing international team of certified productive environment specialists whose mission is to help clients manage time, space, and information, ultimately transforming how they work and live. And Barbara's books also include Taming the Paper Tiger, love that book, Love It or Lose It, Living Clutter-Free Forever, Organizing Paper at Home, What to Toss, and How to Find the Rest, and Less Clutter, More Life. Barbara, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, Leah, thanks for having me.
I was so excited to connect with you again at the Christian Business Women's Luncheon a couple months ago and to invite you to be on the show to talk about this book. As another author to the other, I know that creative process, that thing you just have to get out. And this book contains your wisdom, and it's still an organization, but it's much more than the other books have been because it brings in that spiritual attitude. So tell everyone about the book, your vision for it, how it came about, and just that whole process.
Great. Thanks. I'd love to tell you. It's been over 30 years I've been working on this whole thing of clutter, starting for 20 years with paper and physical and then moving into digital.
Remember when they told us paperless societies?
Yeah, exactly. You know, what happened about that? But about 5 years ago, I guess, I began to realize that based on my experience with really thousands and thousands of individuals and businesses, that the true clutter that prevents us from accomplishing our life or prevents a business from being profitable and productive and the employees from being peaceful is what I call emotional and spiritual clutter. And that's what I wanted to address in this book. And I was talking to a friend of mine, Louise Wanier, who's actually the illustrator for this book. And oh, I just wish the listeners could see the pictures. I mean, they're just...
They can when they order the book.
Yes, they're just breathtaking. And this came about because I was talking with her. We started out, actually, she started in technology, and I was working with a software program, Taming the Paper Tiger, that organized paper, and she had a technology product that organized electronic information. So we were collaborating together. And we've known each other for years. But then she went into the arts, and she's a fabulous artist and photographer. And I was chatting with her and telling her, you know, I want to write this book. And this book, I want to be the principles that have evolved over these 35 years that are timeless, that will be just as good and just as true 200 years from now as they are now, starting with clutter is postponed decisions, which is the four words on which my whole business has been built, ending with together we're better. And she said to me, well, you know, I have a condo at Carolina Beach. She said, just go down to your condo at Carolina Beach, you know, lock yourself up for a couple of weeks and write it. And I said, well, Louise, I can't. And she's, why not? And I said, because this book is not a how-to book. All the other books I've written have been the how-tos.
Right.
I mean, if you read Organizing Paper at Home, What to Toss, and How to Find the Rest, it tells you everything you need to know about every piece of paper that comes into the household. Tax papers, photographs,
right,
memorabilia, all that kind of stuff. This book is a why-to. It's like, why bother? Because some people look at taming the paper tiger or organizing paper at home and say, ah, it's just too much work and it's not really worth it.
And where to start. Yeah, and all those kind of things, right? Yeah.
I said, this is a why to book. And a why to book has to touch people's emotions. And that means it has to have art. It's got to have pictures. And she said, well, tell me about the book. And I said, well, I know it's about 6 inches square, because that's how I'd seen it in my mind. Turns out it's 7 inches square, but
close enough.
Yeah, close enough. And I said, you know, it's like maybe a half inch thick at the most. It's under 100 pages. You can read it in less than an hour. She said, well, when you look at the cover of the book, what do you feel? And I said, peace.
And it's a lovely purple shade with these lovely flowers on the cover. And it is exactly that. It's a very peaceful cover that invites you in.
So then she said, okay, now open the book. And when you look in the first pages, what do you see? And I said, hope. She says, oh, okay. She says, well, what about the next page? And I said, well, energy. She said, you know, why don't you just fly out to Pasadena, come to my art studio, and we'll just write this book. I said, are you kidding? She said, no. I said, well, this was in June. I said, well, what's your calendar look like in July? And she said, well, I'm available July 21, 22, and 23. And I looked at my calendar, and those were the only 3 days in July I could have done that. And to make it more exciting, on July 20th, one of my certified productive environment specialists from Pennsylvania was in town, and I needed to take her to the airport on the 20th. So it was like I was already going to the airport.
It's a God moment.
It was a God moment. I mean, it was like God has to be planning this. So I said, okay, we'll do it. So I flew it out. Her studio is just awesome. It's definitely a productive environment. You know, my company's called Productive Environment Institute.
Right.
And I define a productive environment as an intentional setting in which you can accomplish your work and enjoy your life. And her studio is exactly that. So being there was absolutely wonderful. So that's kind of how the book evolved.
Well, and because it's a why to versus a how to, what's the difference? Kind of, you know, give us that information as to when we open the book and we see these gorgeous pictures of peace and energy and hope. How do we walk through that book? What messages are we getting and all those kind of things?
Well, one of the things I wanted with the book to be was, I did some research before I wrote the book about, you know, what we call coffee table books.
Right.
You know, I look in my house, I have a bookshelf of beautiful, big, gorgeous coffee table books, which I've read probably once, maybe twice, because they're heavy. They're
right.
Awkward. They're, you know, they look nice on the bookshelf, but you don't cuddle up in bed with them and you can't stick them in your handbag.
They're usually bigger than those great big children's picture books and weigh
exactly,
a ton.
Exactly.
Right?
So I said, okay, this book has to be accessible. It needs to be a book that you can, you know, I mean, it's small enough to fit in your handbag, to fit in the back of the toilet, in the bathroom, you know, I mean, just on the bedside table, because it's not something you're going to do immediately. It's something you need to ponder and think about. And so it's really designed to address the title, Less Clutter, More Life, basically is based on my observation that 80% of what we keep, we never use.
Right.
And the more we keep, the less we use.
All right, because it's one, you can't find it.
Yeah.
And two, it's more of a, like you watch the hoarder shows, right?
Yeah.
And they're not keeping it because it has any true value. It has an emotional thing to it. It's a safety net. It's a what if I need it? And what would happen if you got rid of that? Or, you know, versus taking a picture of something that's a keepsake in this day and age. And, you know, there's so many different ways. But I say we have all of these meccas to materialism, because every time I drive down the road, there's another storage place going up.
Yeah.
But we have too much stuff from our house and it's going out. We get in our cars, there's so much stuff. So it's just kind of a manifestation of how hectic our lives are, how crowded, and how much we're looking for something to fill the spaces.
Well, and you've said an important word. You're looking for something to fill the spaces. And my experience is, when I started working with organizing in the beginning. I did some work with hoarders to begin with. I don't do that anymore. This wasn't my choice, but I've had experience with it, so I know something about it. And even now, when I work with very successful people and people that own businesses and that do lots of things, and they still struggle with clutter. I mean, you can't tell when you see somebody out on the streets whether or not it's an issue. You know, you really can't. But when I found someone who had difficulty letting go of something, and I began to ask questions, what I found was if I ask enough questions, I would inevitably find out that there was a severe emotional loss in that person's life.
Right.
And one of the pages in the book, page 16, says, here are a few I've heard. My mother died when I was 6. I lost the job I loved. I always wanted to be a dancer, but this illness changed everything. My parents kept everything. I always wanted to be a mom. My husband left me 10 years ago. We lost our child. What else comes to mind?
Well, it's, you know, as humans, we search to fill the spaces, those emotional voids and those kind of things. And the younger we start having those voids, the more we start trying to find the material things in it. But your book points out, and we've had a conversation before, it's a spiritual answer to that need. But yet we manifest things because things are easier to deal with. They're easier to grab and keep and put place a value on rather than confront those emotions in those empty spaces.
Well, based on a personal experience I had, what I found was I was married the first time for 14 years. Mm-hmm. And we had adopted 3 children. We'd moved into a new house. I remember calling my mother and saying, I could live in this house the rest of my life. I never dreamed of living anywhere like this. I remember the sinks were in the shape of seashells. And I grew up on a farm in Nebraska. It was, you know, very plain and ordinary. I thought, I could live in, and it was on the corner and there was grass. And I could live here for the rest of my life. And I remember being in an airplane flying over St. Louis and looking out, and the sky was Tar Heel blue and clouds were fluffy, and thinking, you know, my husband's working for a nonprofit and he really likes his job. And I had these 3 adopted children. One was mentally disabled, but she was beginning to do well. And I had this little organizing business that was making a few $100 a month, which was enough to fill the gap for my husband working for a nonprofit, and thinking, this is going to be the best year of my life. And a month later, my husband says, I want a divorce. I was devastated. I mean, it was like, oh, my word. And I sat in a counselor's office, and she said to me, all right, Barbara, you have a blank slate. What do you want to do? I said, I don't know. I have no idea. I was Mrs. Tom, and that was really all I wanted to be. And she made a statement that changed my life, that I used to reinvent myself, and that I used with all of my clients, both my personal and my business clients, which was, let's start with what you don't want. And the interesting thing about clutter, we've talked about physical clutter, but what you don't want, your environment is also your brain. If your brain is full of, oh, I can never do that. I shouldn't have done that. That'll never work. I can't afford that. Nobody's going to buy that.
The mental clutter.
Well, the physical clutter is a replica of the mental clutter.
We manifest what our mind possesses.
So now what I've learned is that most people, ironically, and most businesses, I know you know that from your business consulting, most businesses are not very clear about what their purpose is.
Right.
And I believe one of the major premises in this book is that every single one of us was created for a specific purpose on earth. God created us with the end in mind. And when we know what that purpose is, then it's easy to look at something, whether it's a physical something or whether it's an idea in our head, and say, does this help me accomplish my work and enjoy my life?
Right. And if the answer is... You have that framework then. It's like, this is what's important. Is this a step on that path?
Right. In fact, the premise of the book is that our lives are like a puzzle. And there's a beautiful, Louise has a gorgeous picture in here of a puzzle that I just love, but it doesn't have a frame. unlike a puzzle that you and I might sit down to put together, we put the frame together first.
Yeah, we want the flat edges, and that gives us some starting point, and then we fill in the picture.
But God doesn't God has the frame to our puzzle, and the puzzle is so much bigger than anything we ever dreamed of. But every single thing that happens in our lives is a piece in that puzzle. This conversation that you and I are having, the fact that we met over two decades ago, I mean, that then... And, you know, I'm getting older. I'll be 68 this month. And
I turned 50 yesterday.
Oh, did you? Congratulations. I remember my 50th birthday was my best birthday because I said, my goal is to give a speech when I'm 100. That's my goal. And at 50, I said, I have a half a life left. And 50 since then has been so much better than the first 50 years. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
I always said I was going to be Moses. I had the first 40 years wandering in the wilderness. I got the next 40 years taking everybody with me. And then I've got the next 40 years making sure everybody finds God. Right?
Yeah. It's kind of the same thing. Well, one of the things about getting older is that you begin to see what that piece that happened 30 years ago, where it fits in. I mean, something that happened 30 years ago that you thought was absolutely devastating, and you now say, oh, that's what that's about.
It was a piece of the puzzle to prepare you for where you're at and what you're supposed to be doing.
That's right. And every single thing that you go through, every pain is intended ultimately for God's glory. It's right. To your growth and God's glory, which is, you know, what makes it so exciting. One of my favorite pages in the book is page 14 that says, what stops us? And Louise has put this fabulous picture of this stone lying in grass. I just love it. And so you asked at the beginning about what's the difference between a why to and a how to. Well, the other books were all the how to, but this is like, what are the things that stop us from
the how to's are the mechanics and the why to is the motivation.
That's right. Okay. What stops us? I never have enough time. I have too much to do. I have better things to do. Organizing is boring. It's too difficult. It never lasts. It's never good enough. I often overthink the situation. I didn't create it. I have no idea what it is. I'm easily distracted and go off on tangents. I get stuck in the memories of the past. It's too emotionally draining. I want to be responsible and respectful of things I've been given. I have to take care of other people and other things in my life first. It's hard to admit I have an issue. I'm afraid to let something go. I might want it back.
Well, and that gets down to businesses and successful businesses when we're working with them. What I find is people are either really organized or they're really disorganized. But even in the organization, it's around the things they enjoy doing, the things they're comfortable doing. If there's an emotional issue, whether that's because there's a couple in the business and the relationship is a different dynamic at work than it is at home, mm-hmm. or should be. Those mechanics, those elements of that, we get focused on the mechanics and not on the realization. If that's truly our mission, if that's truly our vision, if that's truly our goal, then everything else has to go.
That's exactly
right.
And
so that clutter, emotional clutter, those excuses, if you enjoy something, you have the time.
One of the things our company does, I have this group of consultants, certified productive environment specialists. Oh, they're just awesome people. They're mostly in the U.S., but we've got one in Germany and one in New Zealand and one in Japan and two in Australia and two in Canada. We're just growing. It's so exciting. And one of the services that we provide, which is my favorite thing business-wise I've ever done, and it'll be 37 years, we call a productive environment party. In some companies, it's called a productive environment day, kind of depending on the culture.
It's a shred day.
Well, it's more than a shred day.
Okay.
Okay. If you take we love to work with groups of, say, we've done really small groups all the way up to really big ones. But an ideal one, you take a department, a small company or department, say 25 or 30 people. And you say, how many of you, if you had the time, are things in your office that you could comfortably get rid of? Out of 25 people, 24 would say yes. But who goes to work and says, oh, I don't have better to do today. I'm going to clean out the files. And if you do clean out the files, people look at you and say, what in the world are you doing? We have this project to do.
Right.
And somebody else, in order for me to clean it out, I have to ask you whether we really need to keep it. And you don't want to be bothered, And if I throw this out, the boss is going to ask me for it and all that. So We turn this day into an event, a party.
Right.
We start the day food because you feed people, right?
And get them in a good mood.
Get them in a good mood. And while they're eating, I do a seminar called Sometimes It Takes an Expert to Take Out the Trash.
Oh, that's fun.
And it's giving them the guidelines that are actually right. in this book, Less Clutter, More Life. And the philosophy for management is, if in doubt, keep it. We're not taking any risks here at all whatsoever. We're just saying, what can you comfortably throw away? Then we're also creating a form where when an employee is cleaning out their individual office and they come across something, they say, I don't need this, but I'm scared to throw it away.
Right.
Then they can list it. So we collect all that. So we're collecting
right.
it. Then we do, we set up recycling stations, shredding stations,
right.
what we call trash to treasure stations. So if you find something that you don't want.
If you find out you have 12 staplers on your desk because it's been buried under the clutter.
Yeah. Well, now that might go to an office supply
right.
station.
Okay.
But another one would be, you know, you have this mug that you got at a trade show and you don't really like it.
Okay.
But it's got a frog on it and another employee sees it. And says, oh, man, my son would love this. So it's like the rule is all day long, employees can go into the trash to treasure and they can take anything they want as long as they take it home.
Okay. I was gonna say.
Yeah. And then we give away prizes, Starbucks cards or
right.
Panera Bread cards or something for prizes for the funniest thing, the oldest thing, the most unlikely thing, the most interesting thing or whatever. And then we send them back to their offices to start
right.
cleaning. And some people don't need to because they're already organized. Well, they then go work on the corporate places.
Right, you know, the central places.
One of my favorites is in the kitchen under the sink, which is where the cartridges are for the printers.
So is there an award for bravery?
You know, the cartridges for the printers that we don't even have anymore. You know, they go to the storage rooms or stuff like that.
The department refrigerator
yes.
that's had stuff in there that looks more like a science experiment.
Exactly. Then at noon, we all get together for lunch
okay.
because we want people to tell stories
right.
about what they're finding. Oh, and let me back up and say, you know, in the beginning, employees are often sitting there with their arms crossed.
Right.
Like, I have real work to do today. And besides that, I don't want to throw away anything. And so I open with the question, how many of you left home this morning with more pieces of paper lying around than you prefer? Well, 50% will immediately raise their hand. Statistically, it's true for 80%.
Right.
So then I say, everything we're going to do today applies at home. Well, now they're listening, not because of what they're going to do when they get home, but because they want to go home and tell their family members to do.
A new goal. Right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So I've got their attention. So we do that. Then
right.
at lunch, we do a seminar. And how do you apply these less clutter, more life principles to your computer? And so then we switch and we organize files and
right.
electronic email and things like that. Well, in one company, it was an insurance company. They had 400 and some employees. And the president came to me and said, we're getting ready to move and we're going paperless. So how can you help us? I said, give me your most cluttered department and one day. So we went to client services and we had one day. We did one of these productive environment days. At the end of the day, he said, okay, 11 more days. So we did 12 days.
Yeah,
I didn't think of that at the time, but that's true. At the end of the 12 days, we had shredded alone 33,000 pounds of paper.
Oh, man.
And had deleted almost one half of the files on their server in 12 days.
Well, I mean, and I'm one of those hyper-organized people, but I also know that the more stress I'm under for scheduling and stuff, the more likely I am to take the time in the office and say, this has to go,
mm-hmm.
whether it's old textbooks or, you know, and periodically some of them are collector's items, I'm sure. But now you can scan those pages in if you want to keep some little thing out of it. You don't have to keep the whole textbook. And it's taking that time to clear off the shelves. I mean, I have bookcases for the secular business stuff and I have bookcases for the faith-based stuff. And so, and I have more desk trays than anybody will ever need. But that's the way I organize, color coding. I want things done fast. My files are organized a certain way. And I know the more organized I am, the less stressed I become and the less stuff that's around to emotionally drain me while I'm doing that. So I stay more focused when I take time, pun intended.
Well, one of the things I want to point out, though, that I think is really important is one of the stumbling blocks that people have is they look at an organized person, someone who's naturally organized. You sound like you're a
freak.
Yeah, that's
right.
That, And I can't be like you. And
right.
So part of the reason I think that I'm good at what I do is because I'm not a naturally organized person. I've been diagnosed with ADHD. I'm a musician. I'm a right-brained. I love the big picture. Details drive me crazy.
Well, and it's mine developed because I needed a coping skill.
Yeah.
Because I'm right-brained. I'm an artist. I do the writing and stuff. But I've always been in an environment of left-brained people. And the stress level that comes from typically being in finance or those kind of modes versus a more creative. Yes, people do get creative with numbers, but that's not me. And having those kind of things. But I'm also a visual person. So if I want something done, I can remember being in one company here in the area and had to keep track of four executives. So I went out and got fluorescent file folders. And I mean, they mm-hmm. were those glow in the dark. And there were four sets of four
right.
and four different colors. And the rule was they got one of those, they had 24 hours to return it. Well, by the time I got to the last folder, I knew there was an issue, right? If I had no folders, they were 4 days behind. And they'd say, well, I don't know where it is. And I was like, one, two, you know, because you could see them glowing in their office
right.
standing at the door.
Oh, I love that.
And it's just, you know, you have to find what works for you. And that works for me as a visual person.
Well, one of the principles in Less Clutter, More Life is half of any job is having the right tool.
Right.
I grew up on a farm in Nebraska. I learned that from my daddy very early on. And he used to show me. He often didn't have the money to buy
right.
the kind of tool they needed. And he'd go to the junk pile and use some baling wire or something and put
he'd MacGyver it.
Yeah,
remember MacGyver.
Exactly. Right. You know, he would make it, you know, make it work. One of the other principles in the book is one that's appropriate here, which is not, well, people will say to me, what should I do? And I'll say, that's the wrong question.
Right. It's what can I do?
What will I do?
Right.
Sometimes there are things I can do, but I'm not even willing to do them.
It's true.
So it's what will I do? And there are so many ways. That's why I love what I do, because even after 37 years, God never created two individuals the same.
No, our fingerprints are different. We did this on the show last week. Our identical twins don't even have the same fingerprints. And that show was about our eight different intellects and how our fingerprints can reveal how different we are and how unique we are and how our brain maps. And so that's a great point, because a person like me who's visual can't use anything else to organize, because
right.
it's just more stress. So we have to find those tools that work.
That's exactly right. And so it is an art. I mean, I see organizing itself as an art form. And interestingly enough, often creative right brain people have the feeling that if they got organized, it would actually hamper them. But it's actually the opposite. It frees them up. But it's only because they saw organization in a certain way. Like, one of the things that people will hear is like, oh, I suppose you're one of those handle a piece of paper only once. I said, no, because it doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, if you take a good example is if you take the mail out of the mailbox and you put it in the middle of your desk and you say, I'm going to handle it only once, and you start through it and you throw this away and you do this and you're halfway through it, and what happens? The phone rings or your email
right.
comes in or something, and you deal with it and you never get to the bottom of the pile. And the bottom of the pile was the most important thing, and it's buried in a pile somewhere. So it isn't handle it only once. It's handling it only once to figure out what to do with it to get it into a system. And that's the key word. We use the word system as
right.
an acronym, saving you space, time, energy, and money.
Right.
Any system. And every time, one of the principles in the book is every time there's something in your life that you do repeatedly, you need a system. It's like when you get up in the morning, you don't have to think about brushing your teeth. You have a system. You know where
right.
the toothbrush is. You know where the toothpaste is. It's a habit, and you've just done it. Well, it's the same way. And I give an example of laundry. I used to detest doing laundry. It was like I always felt like Cinderella every time I was doing it. And one day I thought about it, and I thought, you know, Barbara, this is ridiculous. You are going to have to do laundry for the rest of your life. So don't you think it would make sense if you figured out some way to make peace with it? So I thought about it, and I realized what were some of the things that bothered me. Well, one of the things was I wanted to do it not just laundry. Well, my husband and I are not very social people. We're usually home Friday nights and Saturday nights most times. And my laundry room is next to the kitchen, which is on the first floor.
Okay.
So throwing laundry in and out of the laundry is on Friday and Saturday nights, no big deal. I can do it in between TV shows
right.
or, you know, whatever we're watching.
You didn't like the isolation.
Yeah. And the other thing was it hurt my back to fold it, Well, in the bedroom, when we moved into our new house, we got one of those high beds that you have to crawl. Well, now it's exactly the right height for folding laundry, and there's a TV in there. So I record TV shows that I want to listen to.
Right.
And so then when it's time to fold laundry, I dump the laundry on the bed, flip on the show that I want to watch, fold the laundry, and now it's fun.
Because now the only thing you need is a flip and fold to make it all consistent and fit in the drawers better. But that's true. I mean, someone will ask me why am I organized that way? It works for me. I mean, I can give them tips and I can turn, but they really have, like you're saying, they really have to be motivated to want to get that clutter out of their lives. Whether that's, I am an avid reader and books. I still have thousands of digital books, but some books I just want my hands on. Mm-hmm. But I also know that I need to know where they're at in the bazillion shelves that are around the house. And so it's like, okay, Old Testament things go together, or things related to government grants and contracts can go together. So I know at least which shelves to go to.
Well, that's true. And you know, one of the other things I think that's really important related to the why, one of the major principles in the book Less Clutter, More Life is what we call our productive environment process.
Okay.
It's a five-step process. And number one is state your vision. Number two is identify your obstacles. Number three is commit your resources. Number four is design and execute your plan. And number five is sustain your success. Well, notice the common word is your.
Right.
This is the art.
You got to own it.
You got to own it. I've always said, you know, people say, oh, you just die if you saw my office or my house. I don't care. It's yours. If you know, if you like it, I don't have anything to say about it. You know, now if you want help, I will move heaven and earth to help you. But I am not going to walk across the street to convince you to do it. It has to come, you know, internally. But one of the things we always start with is, if you were organized, or when somebody says, I want your help, it's to do what? What is the vision if you were organized?
Or what would you get from it?
What would you get? How would you feel? What would it look like? What could you do differently? The sky's the limit, you know, and you own that. Nobody owns that vision except you. So my goal is just to give you permission to say it. To say, you know what? I've always wanted to write a book. Or I'd really like to get a new job. Or I want to improve my marriage. Or it doesn't make any difference because your environment affects everything. So then we go to step two, which is state your obstacles. So it's like, well, what if you already tried to fix this that didn't work, you know? Or what do you think might prevent it from working?
Right.
And you have obstacles, but based on my 37 years, I have obstacles you don't know about. Because I know that if you go down that road, this is probably what's going to happen. Then you go to step three, which is resources. Okay. One of the questions, you know, when somebody wants to hire somebody like us, and I know you have this experience too, right? One of the first questions is, how much is this going to cost and how long is it going to take?
Right.
And my answer is, well, I'm not sure yet because I don't know exactly what you need. But one thing I am sure of, and that is the longer you wait, the longer it's going to take and the more it's going to cost. That's right. So it's kind of like pay me now or pay me later.
Well, you know, and it's, when we're setting up accounting systems, that process of setting that up, especially with my government grants and contract clients, they'll go in and they'll set something up and they'll take the template that's already there. And then most recently I was talking with a company and they were like, yes, we're going to do it. And I gave them the price and it included a whole package of policies and procedures and everything. And they came back and said, well, we know we need to do it. And now they've been at this only a month, so it's not like they've been at it 10 years. And I said, but we've already set it up, and it's probably going to be too hard to change it. And I was like, well, it's going to be even harder after the auditor's in and says, you haven't done this, and you can't be in reimbursed these costs. And they're like, well, you know, we just think it's too much money to do this. And I'm thinking, it's the money. I mean, and it wasn't even a five-figure or anything like that. But it was like, it's the money that takes to be compliant with the terms and conditions of your contract that you've said, my accounting system will do this.
All right.
Right? And it makes it so much simpler to have that system there that says, this is why we have to do it. This is where it goes. This is where the document goes in that process from the beginning. Now, when they get the audit 4 years from now, to go back 4 years and have to redo all of that and usually pay it out of your own pocket and have penalties and all these kind of things. You know, that's just the things, but it's like, well, it's going to be too hard. It's like, if you're in a month into the process versus 4 years or 10 years or whatever, it's so much easier and so much more cost effective to start. If you're going to start your office and home, how does it need to look? What distracts you? What makes you happy? How, if you're writing a book, what do you need where to do that with?
I want to, one of the stories that happened to me was there was a client of mine who was in the financial services business and got audited and had had this happen before. Right. And so expected that this was a 2 to 4 day process. Just figured that the auditors would be there.
2 to 4 months.
Yeah. At the end of the second day, the auditor came out and said, I'm done. Every single thing they ask for, they could find literally in 5 seconds. Because one of the things that I've developed through the years is a program that ties physical files in with the electronic search on the computer.
Right.
So we take a file cabinet and basically turn it into a warehouse. And instead of trying to figure out what to call a file, we just put a number on it.
Right.
And then we go to that whatever the program is. We have different programs that we use depending on what the client needs. And then we can keyword it with multiple keywords.
So well, when you're the making a library, a Dewey Decimal System, a card catalog, a thing.
Well, except the difference from a Dewey Decimal System, and we do consulting with libraries, sure. One of the differences for individuals is that this is a random system.
Okay.
Dewey Decimal System is like, oh, this is too complicated, right. But this is random. So it's, and it came from the idea of a music warehouse. My colleague who helped me develop this was in a music warehouse in California, and he uh-huh. observed this huge warehouse with shelves and rows and rows and rows. And when the shipment came in, there was a robot, and they would put the box down on the robot, and then the robot would say, okay, go down to aisle 11 on the third shelf on the right, and there's a space for that box of widgets right. or whatever. Well, then when you wanted widgets, you type in widgets, and it would tell you where the widgets were. They weren't necessarily together. Well, first, people, especially organized people, oh, no, I've got to be like things together. I said, wait a minute. When you sit in front of the computer and you do a search on Google and you get the information, do you care where it came from?
No.
No. Well, we do the same thing.
Just with how fast you get it.
That's
not
right.
Complete, right.
So we do exactly the same with physical things. We're indexing physical things with multiple keywords, which means people could share them because you might call it automobile and I might call it car and my colleague might call it vehicle.
Right.
And
you're tagging.
You're tagging it. And suddenly, so at the end of a day and a half, the auditor came in and said, every single thing you've asked me for, I've got it. I'm here because I'm gone. I mean, the client was like, absolutely thrilled because for 20 years he had suffered through those.
Well, yeah, it's because the length of time is in inverse proportion to your organization.
Yes.
So if you're not organized and you can't find that document and it has to be a hard copy for a lot, especially the government things, if it has to be a hard copy, it's somewhere in somebody's pile in some corner of the building that you've been in for 20 years.
That's exactly right.
And I can remember as an bank auditor starting out and having to go look for a receipt for $2.50 and going into like the sixth basement under the parking garage yeah. and trying to find it. I was like, it's $2.50. We probably spent $2,500 trying to find that $2.50 receipt. And that was due to lack of organization, amongst other things.
Well, there's a couple of things I think that are interesting here. One of the things to keep in mind for a listener is like, okay, if you've got a big mess and you're thinking, oh, this is just too big. One of the principles in Less Clutter, More Life is today's mail is tomorrow's pile. So when we go into work, one of the other services we have is called an 8-hour miracle. And it's an organizing intervention for one person in one office. And we've done it thousands of times. And it just, I mean, we've had people say, you saved my job, you saved my marriage, you know.
Saved my sanity.
Yeah, saved my sanity. We've done it so many times. And the principle is when we go into that person's office, we ignore what they did in the past to begin. Because research shows that 80% of it you're not going to use anyway.
Right.
So for right now, we're going to ignore it. And we're going to put into place a system, saving you space, right. time, energy, and money. And our system is called the Magic Six. And the Magic Six came out of, in 1995, when I first worked with a software developer, I know that organizing is an art, and I knew there was lots of flexibility, but I also had the gut feeling that there were some things not negotiable. That
right, there's certain, some core things.
That's right.
Like so, primary collars.
That's right. Right. Exactly. Great analogy. So I organized 200 people with the idea of saying, what is common about those 200 individuals? And out of that, I came up with the Magic Six. So when we go in for an 8-hour miracle, the very first thing we do is make sure the Magic Six is in place. And what we promise in the 8-hour miracle is 3 things. It doesn't promise it'll organize your whole office, because if you've been piling papers in it for 2 decades, you can't handle it in 8 hours. But it promises 3 things. That number one, you'll know what to do with every new thing that comes in because you have a system
right.
of the Magic Six. Number two, that everything we filed in the 8 hours we've worked together, which, by the way, can be done virtually, because some people, they're too embarrassed. They don't want you to see the right. office. Can be virtually. You can find it in 5 seconds because it's going to be keyworded, so you can find it.
Okay.
And then third, we're going to use the last 30 minutes of that 8 hours to randomly select things from any place in the office to say, okay, do you know where this goes now?
And so the pile you trip over, you can deal with and go through it to make sure you understand those six key
that's
factors.
Right. And if we don't do that, you don't owe us any money. And we've done it thousands of times, and it just always works. The other thing that I think is important here to keep in mind is that my whole business has been based on clutter is postponed decisions.
Right.
You know, will I need this and all this? If we go back to the vision of what you
right.
want, when we do these productive environment parties or productive right. environment days now, we say to the employees, you have one assignment today and one only. You're not organizing anything today. All you're doing today is going through your office as fast as you can, picking up every item there and saying, does this help me accomplish my work or enjoy my life? And if it doesn't, it is by definition clutter. If you're not sure, you keep it. It's just the things you're sure of. And that's kind of the way this whole book is about, is that if you ask the question, does this accomplish my work and enjoy my life? And you say, no, it's clutter. And it's like peeling the layers of an onion. You keep peeling and peeling and peeling. And eventually you will get to your purpose.
Right.
So that's why when people don't know what to do with it, I say, let's don't worry about what you don't know. We're not going to worry about that. Let's worry about what you do know. It's somebody once said, I love it. I think it was David Jeremiah says, I don't worry about what it says in the Bible that I don't understand. I worry about what I understand, but I don't do.
Right.
Which is kind of the same thing. I'm not focusing on what you don't know. Let's work on what you do know. Or I think it was Portia in Merchant of Venice said, oh, if only to know where to do. You know, it's like we're figuring out what you will do. And as you do that, you're going to create a productive environment.
A system is only as good and as effective as being the person able to use that system. So process. So when it doesn't gel with your personality or your style. And I can remember one of my supervisors at Ford at Michigan. And he was a piler. Now, personally, my personality type would be piles of paper normally, but mm-hmm. I tend to be overly organized at work and things like that. Although, if you looked at the office right now, you would not know that from being in school full-time and everything else. But, you know, you're sitting there and you're looking at it, and you would go into his office, and he had a file cabinet, but it had no file folders. It right. had piles of paper. And I can remember our senior manager coming and getting on him because he wasn't going to be able to find anything. And his name was Jim. And Jim goes, what is it you think I can't find? And so he started reeling things off, and Jim could go to the pile of paper, right. where it was, and you know, it didn't look organized, but he did have a system that worked for him. Now, the poor person in Inherity's office
yeah.
after that was completely wasted because he didn't know what pile. There was no cross-reference or anything like that. But that's also important. Our families need to be able to work the system. Our coworkers need to be able to access the information, because if we get hit by a bus tomorrow, if we're not organized enough for someone else to do that system and figure it out, then, you know, we're leaving a legacy of clutter.
Well, that you bring up exactly what's on page 60, which says, is it the right system for me? And there are four questions.
Okay.
Number one is, does it work? You know, and this applies, like we're getting to the time of year now when people are choosing calendars.
Right.
There's zillions of them, paper, electronic, all. Does it work? The second one is, do I like it? You know, sometimes it works. And I think about, I worked with the CFO of a movie production company. And I went into his office, and he had piles. But I didn't look at it and say it looked disorganized. To me, it looked like, oh, that's a pile for that project,
right.
and that's a pile. I mean, I didn't look at it. But he said, I want a clean desk. But he said, every time I have a clean desk, I can't find anything. So it was like, yes, it worked, but he didn't like it. So that's
I resemble that remark.
And then the third one is, does it work for others?
Right.
But here's the fourth one, and this applies to what you said. You know, right now, don't look at my desk. It's, can you recover quickly? If you walked into your office and you said, okay, this is it, I've had it, very quickly, you could have it put together because you have a system. The problem is not clutter. Clutter happens. It happens to all of
right.
us. In fact, I've said many times, if people came to my home or my office unannounced, they might look around and say, and they pay you money for organizing? In fact, this is a real story. I love to have people, I have a home office and I love to have people come there. And I frequently do because I want to show them systems, it's visual and whatever. Well, one Saturday afternoon, somebody was going to come. And I don't usually do it on Saturday afternoon, but it was a couple and that was the only time they could come. So I said, okay, no problem, you know, I'll work that out. Well, that Saturday morning, my husband had gone to the gym on Friday and left his glasses there. And he needed to go pick them up and he was kind of annoyed. And I said, oh, no problem. I said, I have some errands to run in that part of town. I'll go pick up your glasses and I'll run some errands. Well, in true ADD, you know.
You were late back.
I forgot. You know, I was out. Yeah. Oh, I'm here. I can do this and I can do this. And all of a sudden my phone rings and it's my client. They say, oh, we're almost at your house. And I'm thinking,
oh no, I'm clear across town.
Oh my gosh. And I remember what it looked like, you know. Okay. And I'm thinking, hey, this is a great teaching lesson. So they walked in. I said, take a look around. I said, look at your watch. And they looked at their watch. And 27 minutes later, I had everything put away. And it wasn't stuffed because it had a place. Right. I just hadn't.
You hadn't put it in its place yet. So that's like me. I have my accounting things. I have a file folder that says enter in the accounting system. I have one for expense report. It just hasn't made it into the drawer because the mail was in this week and yesterday was my birthday and I wasn't filing anything. And it was just those kind of things. But I have the pile related to schoolwork and the reference books for each week's assignments. And then I have the client's open items that I'm waiting. They're supposed to have called me and I know I need that file. You know, it's that kind of thing. Like you said, I know where it's supposed to go. I just haven't taken the time to put it there.
Let's talk for a second about something that I think is really a big issue, a big societal issue, actually. When I first started in New York City in the 80s, the way decisions were made, there was a hierarchy of decision making. Every executive had a private secretary. And every private secretary had a file clerk, and every company had a file room, and every file room had a person I always joke and call her Mabel.
Right.
And when an executive was done with a project, he would hand the file to his private secretary, who would purge it, who would hand it to the file clerk, who would organize it, who would file it in the office for like a year or two, and then she'd walk it down the hall to Mabel, and Mabel had the records retention for the entire company, and she knew, okay, this is supposed to stay here for 2 years, and then at that point, it will either be destroyed or it will be shipped off to Iron Mountain.
Right.
That was the decision-making hierarchy. When Bill Gates made it possible for computers to be on every desk, that decision-making mechanism disappeared.
Right. I remember we had one admin for 30 or 40 people.
That's right. That's exactly right. And here's what's happened. I predict, Leah, that we are headed toward the biggest information management disaster in history.
Well, I laugh every time I have computer switches over for servers and stuff. I can remember one of my previous companies that provided the support said I was overly organized because I had all these file structures. This is stuff for focus resources. This is stuff for the radio show. This is for, and you would go down through those hierarchies and I would say, okay, which part of the business am I dealing with?
Right.
And they said, well, there were just too many. And I'm like, there can't be too many. It's electronic, right? Because that's the structuring. You can find, if I want engagement letters for a particular client, it's under the company clients engage. Yeah. And just realizing that people tend to be as disorganized in setting up those electronic systems. Any file can go anywhere.
Well, that you're exactly right. And the reason I'm predicting this disaster is because if you have 1,000 paper documents and you're audited or something and you have to have it, you can hire temporaries who know absolutely nothing about your business and say, flip through these 1,000 pieces of paper and find these. If you have 1,000 electronic documents on your computer, And they're backed up in different places. You know, employees put them on their desktop, which isn't even backed up at night, probably. You know,
so I remember that company.
Yes.
Well, and then when something crashes, I have to do this one. The IRS. The fact that we have to keep our records. They say they can't find things, but you know there are backups. Well, it's too hard for them to figure out where they filed it.
Right.
That's symptomatic of a system that doesn't work, that hasn't been modernized, that they're not thinking or someone's lying, but that's a whole nother conversation. But if we can't use it, if we can't go back and get something electronically for 10 years when the government says we have to have had it for 10 years, or a client comes in and out, whatever that one thing is we think we're going to need, we have to be able to find it. If it's not tagged, if it's not a searchable PDF, if it's not, and if we haven't put it in something that we're going to remember as some kind of structure, then we're sitting there looking through tens of thousands of records. And the other thing is nobody purges backups. Yep. And you get to the end of the year, and if your accounting department backed up 365 days out of the year, well, then you get 365 backups sitting somewhere that you don't really need.
One of the things that we work with on people a lot is what we call the 7 information management questions.
Oh, these ought to be good.
So, and they apply to families as well.
Okay.
And companies. And our this is one of the things that our consultants do in facilitating individuals and families and organizations answering the question, which is, what information do I need to keep? What do I need in order to do my job? And what do I need to keep legally? The second one is, who's responsible? What form do I need it in? Is it paper or electronic? And if it's an electronic, what program? You know, is it in which program is it in? How long? What's records retention for it? Who's responsible for filing it? That's teamwork and job descriptions. Who needs access to it? That's securities and permissions. Right. How are we going to find it? That's naming conventions and version control. And then how is it backed up? And those 7 questions, every family needs to answer, every company needs to answer. And that's where we start with today's mail is tomorrow's pile. So we go in and say, let's start from here. So let's say now, what is it that you need to do your work? And we can't make the decisions. You know, often people are afraid to have us come in because we're going to tell them to throw something away. I'm never going to tell you to throw anything away. I'm going to ask you, when was the last time you used this? What's the worst possible thing that would happen if you didn't have it? I have what we call the art of wastebasketry questions. You know, are there any legal ramifications? In fact, the first book, Taming the Paper Tiger, came out of when I started organizing in 1978 in New York. The question that people kept asking me was, how long do you keep? And in right. those days, it was bank statements because they were bulky and whatever else.
Right. All the checks were in there.
Yeah.
And all that stuff.
So I went to the library to get a book on the subject, and I discovered there wasn't one. I thought, this is amazing, because it doesn't make any difference if you earn $800,000 a year or $18,000 a year. You still need to know the answer to that question. And so that was when, in 1988, I wrote Taming the Paper Tiger, which was how long to right. keep things. And people just were overwhelmed by this. You know, how long do you keep stuff? And we wanted to help them make that decision. And I would just say, you can keep, I have 2 principles. One is the cost factor. You can keep, and this is in the book, that's really okay. important. You can keep everything you want.
If you can afford it.
If you're willing to pay the price, which is time, space, money, and energy.
Right.
So an example would be, and I think of it in the early days, I had a woman who had greeting cards. I mean, hundreds of greeting
right.
cards. Oh, I can't throw these away. They're from people I love, and they're beautiful. And they call. I said, okay, fine. You don't have to throw them away. We want to organize them. How are we going to organize them? You know, because you can do them in notebooks or baskets.
Right.
Or you can talk about all those different things. So we talked about all those. She said, okay, this is what I want to do. So then I said, okay, this is how much space it's going to take. And you have to think about the space, not only for what you have now, but for what you're going to need.
For the next 20 years.
For the next 20 years. This is how much time it's going to take to do it. This is how much money it's going to cost to buy. And so let's say I told her it was going to cost $200. Well, one person might say, $200 to organize greeting cards? Forget it.
Right.
And somebody else might say, oh, $200, you know, that's one night out. And they can imagine being 80 years old and sitting and looking
right.
at them. And so that's the thing. It's not, doesn't have a right or a wrong. That's the art of it. And the other principle of this is that Hemphill's principle, I call it, if you don't know you have it or you can't find it, it's of no value to you.
Right.
So you can keep everything you want if you're willing to pay the price, but if you can't find it, then you might as well not have it.
Well, I know I've been in business 12 years, and this past summer and earlier in the year, I started purging client files. And yeah, especially the government ones or court cases or things like that. You know, it's 7 years, or if I know the behavior of the client and they haven't closed their things out, they're still sitting there. And so it was going through that. And somebody said, well, why don't you just get a storage building? I was like, because I don't want to invest money in storing things that have no value any longer. If I haven't heard from the client in 10 years, even if they come back, nothing's going to be valid that was in here. Unless, of course, it's for an audit, and that still stayed. And you go through that, and I ended up with, I want to say, 4 banker's boxes of hanging files. And all these, and somebody said, well, you know, throw them away. And I got rid of some of them that were bent and you couldn't use because they were so old. But then we just relabeled the file folders.
Right.
And so you get 4 boxes. And I'm like, okay, yes, it takes up space, but there may be a nonprofit that needs something. And you see where they need hanging files or whatever. And I can take a box of very nice, lightly used files that, you know, and take them over and they can use the hanging files. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's, again, it's have a value. Where do you want to put it? And where do you want to go with it? And we're almost at the end of the hour, so we have 5 minutes left. Let's kind of wrap up.
Let me just say one thing that is a really important principle. You know, there are so many people in our world who don't have what they need.
Right.
And one of the things that I love about getting rid of clutter is that when you ask yourself the question, does this help me accomplish my work or enjoy my life? And the answer is no. There's somebody else that really, really needs it. And so getting rid of clutter is a blessing to everyone. It's a blessing to you, but you can bless other people as well.
Well, you donate the clothes to a charity. You can donate your books. You can have a yard sale and donate the proceeds to some organization. There's just so many things you can do with the stuff that's cluttering your life to give someone a better life.
Exactly.
So less clutter, more life is available where? How do people get it?
There is a website, lesscluttermorelife.com. Just go to that website and there you will be able to get it.
And let's call out, we were talking about who helped you print the book and develop it here locally.
East Coast Digital Printing.
And they're out near the airport?
They're in Morrisville. And they have just been a joy to work with, an absolute joy. And it's funny because I searched literally all over the United States getting the right printer because I wanted certain paper and certain size and whatever else. And I ended up with somebody right in my own backyard.
Amazing how that works. It's another God moment.
It is, absolutely.
So if you could leave the listeners with one key thing that they could act on today to have less clutter and more life, what would that one key thing you want to leave them with?
You want to ask yourself, what is the one thing that needs to happen in my life in the next year for me to feel happy with my progress? And that's the vision. And then you want to say, what's preventing that from happening? And what are the resources that will make that happen? And that's your 5 steps. So it's state your vision, identify your obstacles, commit your resources. Then it's design and execute your plan. And then step 5 is the one that people often forget. It's like, oh, that didn't work, and they abandon it, instead of saying sustain your success. And if you can't do it alone, don't be afraid to ask for help. The most important principle in Less Clutter, More Life is together we are better. And there's someone else that can help you accomplish your work and enjoy your life.
And your website is?
LessCluttermoreLife.com. And you can also go to BarbaraHemphill.com.
Thanks, Barbara, for being on the show. And until next week, everyone, stay focused on the important things in life.